What's up, my homies? Welcome to the Big Ball Broadcast, Episode 5. Pre-recorded in some rundown pencil-making factory, it's the Big Ball Broadcast, with your hosts, Kyle Aber, and Otherworld Steve.
Hoo-hoo! Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm
Kyle Aber. I'm an anime voice actor with Dragon Ball Z, voice of narrator, and Ox King that you can currently hear and watch in all of its uncut glory on Cartoon Network weeknights.
This is Otherworld Steve. I'm an anime journalist and twice-a-year voice actor. And you can hear me on Fullmetal Alchemist, but only if you stumble across episode 5. But you can also hear me on the last episode of Yu Yu Hakusho, along with my lovely wife and our friend Timmy.
Timmy! We are so happy because this show is doing pretty good, considering we're not Adam Curry and all that. Although, we are in iTunes. But I'm happy to announce that we've had our record high amount of downloads this past week. We had 71 in one day, and for us, that's a lot. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the show around the globe via iTunes. So, yeah, coming up today, we're going to be listening to some voicemails from our brand new listener line that we got set up. And we'll give you the number later in the show and all the contact info you need and can stand. Once again, we just got news out the bootah. Just in case you're under a rock, November 1st is the release date for the two-disc special edition of Star Wars Episode 3: Revenge of the Sith.
Actually pushed up a week early than the alleged rumored November 8th release. So what do we have to look forward to on this special two-disc collection?
Better dialogue?
Better acting? Less wooden acting?
Oh, P.U. Can someone open a window around here?
No, sorry. You're basically going to get the same cut you saw in the theaters. And just to clear up a little misconception, there is no difference with Star Wars Episode 3 from the digital theater experience, the analog theater experience. Episodes 1 and 2, there were slight variations between the two releases. This one, identical release, so what you saw on the screen is what you're going to see on the disc. But disc 2, we have a whole new potpourri of features, a brand new full-length documentary produced by Lucasfilm. We have two new featurettes, one that explores the prophecy of Anakin Skywalker as the Chosen One, and one that looks at the movie stunts. Also, the 15-part collection of Lucasfilm's web documentaries, and as a special added bonus feature, you get a playable demo of Star Wars Battlefront 2. Is actually included on the DVD.
Nice. And I imagine different retailers will have different, you know, premiums. You know, just like always, Best Buy will offer, like, a sticker or something. And if you go to Target, you can probably get a trading card, and, you know, that sort of thing.
Battlefront 2 gets released that same day on the Xbox, PlayStation 2, and Windows PC. And, as a first, on the Sony PSP. Star Wars Battlefront was the most successful Star Wars game ever. So Lucasfilm and LucasArts is hoping to capture lightning in a bottle again with Battlefront 2. Little piece of Star Wars news on top of that, Revenge of the Sith spent its third week as the number one movie in Japan this past week.
But of course, thanks to the piracy and bootlegging BitTorrent people out there, I'm sure they saw it January 1st.
The movie wasn't even out then. But they probably saw it this past May.
Okay, I was slightly exaggerating.
Okay, just slightly. This comes out of the kind of weird, wacky category. It's alleged, anyway, so far, that actor Christopher Lee is reportedly performing with a heavy metal festival in Germany. It's really hard to hold back the laughter with that one.
Christopher Lee doesn't strike me as a heavy metal fan.
The 82-year-old, yes, 82-year-old Star Wars and Lord of the Rings star is taking part in the Earthshaker Festival in Bavaria and will sing with two bands, Manowar and Rhapsody. According to the concert organizers, Lee will be accompanied by a live orchestra and a choir.
Wait, you did say sing with the bands, right?
Yes, actually sing, up there vocalizing.
Oh, God. Okay, the only thing I can think of, and this is going to go way back beyond most of our listeners' heads, but actually, I'm familiar with Manowar, because I'm a big metal freak, and I was listening to this stuff back in the early 80s. They actually had Orson Welles, the big legendary actor, do some narration for a song called Defender, and he passed away maybe a year or two after that came out. So obviously they never had Orson Welles come out and perform with Man of War. They just played the voiceover tape. So I'm wondering if Man of War decided to just come into the 21st century and take someone that everyone around the globe knows now, you know, Christopher Lee, who's got this resurgence. I mean, first he was Dracula in the Hammer horror classics of the 1960s. And, you know, thanks to, well, Tim Burton kind of resurged his career in Sleepy Hollow and most recently in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. But, of course, he's known in Lord of the Rings and Star Wars. So everyone knows Christopher Lee now.
You and I are both familiar with Manowar, not familiar with this band Rhapsody. So it'll be rather interesting to see what his involvement is going to be over at this festival.
BloodyDisgusting.com is reporting that Blade, you know, the Wesley Snipes vampire trilogy, is being turned into a TV series currently developed by the series screenwriter David Goyer for Spike TV. 13 episodes are planned, and they're looking for a June start date of next year. And, of course, the first question is, and I'm going to shoot that down right now, Wesley Snipes will not be reprising his role as Blade.
Don't think it comes as much of a big surprise where you're bringing a property like this to the small screen. But the first two Blade movies, at least, were rather interesting. So
the first two were good. The third one kind of fell apart, which is sad because David Goyer not only wrote it, but he directed it too, and I had a lot of high hopes for it, but it kind of lost focus on Blade and went on to Jessica Biel and Ryan Reynolds' characters, which were cool, but
yeah, I don't think anybody's really complaining about any focus on Jessica Biel.
No complaints there, but I mean, as a whole, if you're talking about the Blade series, the first two films are superior, and I'm kind of interested to see what they do with the TV series. I know that didn't work so well with The Crow in the past.
As long as we're not going to see another Buffy or, God forbid, something like Firefly.
Shut up, dude. You're going to make me talk about this because you brought it up first. Thank you. Yeah, but there is a Serenity promo DVD packed in with a Battlestar Galactica, yay, Season 1 box set. And I am not only plugging this because I'm a big fan of both shows, I actually make a cameo appearance. So let's go back in time to earlier this year when Universal was kind enough to show Browncoats, a.k.a. Firefly fans, a sneak preview screening of the still-work-in-progress print of Serenity. I attended with some friends in Austin, and Universal sent a camera crew to videotape the fans. So lo and behold, I pop in the disc, and they had this one little featurette dedicated to the fans and the screenings. And there I am with my friends just for one quick second. So I'm very, very happy that I made it on there because I'm such a big fan of the show. And oh, and while I'm also plugging Serenity stuff, I did a character piece for The Signal. The Signal is a Firefly Serenity podcast. And I did a review of the Serenity comic prequel, issue number one. But I did it in a character voice called Bubba Fett. And if you subscribe to the Signal podcast, I think you will supposedly hear me on this week's edition.
And if anybody wants to see the screen cap of Kyle's first Hollywood debut release, you can head over to kylelabor.com. Check out the news and see Kyle in all his fanboy glory.
And while I'm sitting here totally promoting myself here, August 9th is the release date for Baki the Grappler Volume 2 from Funimation. This marks a pretty good appearance of one of my characters, Hanayama, and I actually get to do my first DVD commentary on Episode 5 with director Jeremy Inman. And that is totally twisted, so I look forward to hearing how it comes out because I'm surprised it passed.
Is that like a gallstone or something?
It's so painful, it hurts. Oh, the pain. Oh, of course, Steve pops the top, because once again, we're recording in the middle of the night. What other time would be most appropriate?
Yes, for those of you who may be tuning in for the first time, Kyle and I have had a relationship, non-romantic, let me stress that.
Please, Steve, come on.
Kyle and I have had an ongoing internet-based relationship for going on 4 years now, yet Kyle and I live about 1,500 miles apart. So thanks to modern technology and the digital revolution, we're able to bring this podcast to you, both of us participating from many, many, many miles away.
Courtesy of the great free, and I stress free, program Skype. SKYPE. It's a great way to chat with anyone around the world without running up a big long-distance bill.
And speaking of great programs, not necessarily free, for those of you out there who own a Sony PSP, PlayStation Portable, such as Kyle and I,
yes,
Portable TV began offering directly downloadable movies on July 27th in Japan. Unfortunately, no U.S. version has been announced. But essentially, this is a website that is directly run by Sony and their subsidiary Sonet. If you're in the Japanese market, the URL is www.p-tv.jp. Basically, if you go there, subscribe over there, you can download full-length movies, trailers. Some companies that have already signed up to provide content are Aniplex, and those of you out there know I'm a huge Fullmetal Alchemist fan, and that was brought to us by Aniplex, so hopefully some FMA episodes will be available. Bandai, Sony Pictures Entertainment, and Watanabe Entertainment. Really, really cool prospect here. And I'm hoping that more companies jump on board with this, especially a U.S. company.
And while we in America are drooling over the fact that that content is now available for the Japanese market, we do have a new update for the PSP, which brings the official browser on board. Yeah, you can now surf the net with your PSP officially without any hacks. You can change your wallpaper settings and other goodies now.
Yes, and it is also Java-enabled, so that's pretty cool. Right now, there isn't any Flash ability right now, but I'm sure that's an issue that they're going to address with the next update.
And a warning to hackers out there who may have rigged their PSP previously to run, you know, a Nintendo ROM emulators and whatnot. You do not want to run the new update because that will render all of those hacks completely useless and you won't be able to re-download those.
Basically, if you have the U.S. version 1.5, and if you want to change your wallpapers on a monthly basis or play the ROM emulator games, you may want to wait a little while before you upgrade. But if you have versions 1.51 or 1.52, you can't run those hacks on there, so you might as well just go ahead, upgrade to version 2.0. And from what I was reading online yesterday, people are really digging this web browser, so certainly go ahead and check that out.
MC Wilson over at Broadcast Gamer, I was chatting with him earlier, and he is giving rave reviews to the browser, and I was kind of talking with him about it. It's like, dude, it doesn't have a keyboard. You know, I'm spoiled by, you know, a full keyboard, and it's just not practical to use a full-size keyboard and connect it to a little PSP. And he's like, well, no, it has, you know, that text recognition thing like cell phones do, where it'll predict the text you're doing. And if you're not really doing anything any more than surfing the net and entering a URL, then this is the perfect way to do it on a PSP. If you're wanting to post on a message board or just type endlessly, then you'll want to do something a little more practical, like with a laptop or a PC.
Yes, not for those of you who want to instant message on your PSP. Although, if you're really that much of a diehard, you can go out and buy a USB-compatible, like a laptop-type keyboard, plug that in and use it. Although, to me, it kind of defeats the purpose of having a mobile device like the PSP.
I mean, if they develop something very, very small like the PSP that could be, you know, click it on there maybe. But until then, I don't know. I mean, but I'm going to download the update because I am anxious to see how fast it works, because I'm assuming that the Wi-Fi will allow hotspot connections instantly. Turn on your browser, the thing will give you a prompt saying, do you want to connect? And it's like, yes. And you can do your surfing, get in trouble with your teachers or your boss, and then they'll confiscate it and you'll lose your job and be kicked out of school.
And in theory, because the PSP is MP3 compatible, if you do have a large enough memory card, you can download these podcasts directly to your PSP.
Yay! If you want to circumvent and be a big rebel against the huge Apple Corporation and say no to iPod, then yes, by all means do so, because the PSP works beautifully as an MP3 player. The only, and I mean the only catch, you got to pony up some cash for a good size, and I do recommend at least the 512, or if you can, the gig memory card for the PSP, because if you want to download a lot of content, you're going to need the room.
And if you want the gig memory card, I really hope, if any kids are listening in the audience, I hope you had a really good summer job.
I did hear that Sony is about to release a 2 gig for the small retail price of $349.
Keep up with Guy Lebert's latest voiceover projects, including animation, video games, audiobooks, and more, at his official website. There are also links to his online journal, forum, and convention appearances. Check out KyleLebert.com. That's Kyle, H-E-B-E-R-T.com.
Morgan Freeman. Yes, Morgan Freeman. That's a name we don't discuss too often. He and his company, ClickStar, will begin making movies available online for purchase or rental to watch at home or on the road with your handhelds. This is the wow factor. They want to release content on the same day they're released to the multiplex. That's something Hollywood's been really reluctant to do so far, at a loss of revenue. But, you know, with internet piracy being what it is, it seems like a really great way to fight back with the system, to be able to go home and download a movie legitimately and legally the same day it's released in your local theater. Now, unfortunately, right now, ClickStar services are only dealing with the indie movie scene right now, but Morgan Freeman's hoping that Hollywood will catch on and that larger corporations will make their content available on the same day as theatrical releases.
I got to give him props. It's a definite, interesting marketing experiment, and it kind of reminds me of a few years ago, Jean-Claude Van Damme made a movie, I think it was called Lion of the Desert or something like that, and they had a simultaneous cable premiere, home video release, and theatrical release. And as far as I know, it equally sucked in all regards. No one did anything, no matter how they tried to distribute this movie.
Well, I guess, you know, garbage in, garbage out. But, you know, I think especially with the bootlegging that Star Wars Episode 3 got and the lost revenue that Lucas is going to get on that end, I think it's a great idea. And again, everybody knows I'm a big supporter of the digital revolution. I think this is just part of the natural evolution of that. This article came via CNN.com, and it deals with product placement in television shows. And the concern was that a lot of people out there are using TiVo or TiVo-like devices to record their favorite shows. An option with TiVo is to skip over the commercials and just record the television content. Now, when you're skipping over the commercials, the advertisers are losing, you know, millions of dollars because their products aren't being viewed. So what's happening now, as a result, is a lot of these shows are actually putting the products into the shows. And one really blatant example was with American Idol, where all the judges are drinking Coca-Cola in these Coca-Cola inscribed glasses. You know, really getting the product placement out there.
Yeah.
And although I haven't seen it, I know that was a big complaint with the Fantastic Four movie. Just, you know, really a lot of blatant product placement. It's kind of a fighting back at the digital revolution, but at the same time, it's also an issue for concern with the FCC, because the FCC believes that blatant product placement in television shows and movies like that could be a violation of some of their codes.
Advertisers will always find a new medium. I mean, now advertisers are scrambling to try to find a way to make money with podcasting. And already when you go to the theater, you're inundated with slideshow presentations before the movie trailers even, of, you know, Coke and everything. It's like, you can't escape commercials.
A couple months ago, there's actually a lawsuit filed because, you know, you show up to the theater and it says that the show starts at 2 o'clock and you get in, you get your popcorn, you get your drink, you find a seat, and then you sit through 20 minutes of commercials before the show actually starts.
Right.
And they actually filed a lawsuit saying that they want the actual showtime starts being posted and not the start time of when the commercials start airing.
You know, on an opening weekend of a big blockbuster film, you've got a packed house, so I see why it's appealing to advertisers. You're getting your message across to a full house of people sitting there with their fresh bags of popcorn, and we're going, come on, I see this crap at home. I don't want to see it on the big screen.
Especially with ticket prices being what they are and concession prices, the last thing you want is to sit through 20 minutes worth of commercials.
And something that's kind of related to this with the whole evolution of the way people watch TV entertainment, that, you know, TiVo and replay TV and those sort of devices have really revolutionized the way we watch TV now, because people can skip commercials at will. And also, it also circumvents the Nielsen ratings, because shows, of course, are greenlit and canceled based on their ratings. But when you have something like TiVo, where you're creating an on-demand sort of environment where people can choose to watch their shows whenever they want to, instead of when ABC tells you to watch it, it's Sunday night at 7 p.m. Well, no, I'm just going to set my TiVo and I'll watch it at 3 a.m. on Tuesday morning if I want to. And the thing is, there's no way to accurately report the ratings of a show given the digital recording devices.
So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how these production companies are going to compensate for these types of losses, because in the end, that's what they are. They're losses. They're revenue losses. And as you just stated, sometimes, you know, that's the livelihood of the show. If you can't prove people are watching it, these shows can get canceled. And they can be some really great shows, but if you happen to not be home on, say, a Thursday night at 8 p.m., and you decide to TiVo it, this show doesn't know that people are watching it.
Nielsen ratings get their ratings by, they place like a special sort of box that monitors, literally, the channels you watch, how long you watch them, and that data is reported back. Now, there is no, as far as I know, there's no sort of interactive way for Nielsen to track what people are TiVo or DVRing or digitally recording to watch for playback at a later time. It's pretty safe to assume that the numbers are highly skewed. A show that may have low ratings and yet you go the next day to work or school and all your friends say, did you watch so-and-so last night? Yeah, it was great. And then you hear about the ratings. Oh, this show just
totally plummeted. We're going to cancel it.
And I was like, no way. It's a great show. Come on. We all watched it.
It's kind of the fate of shows like Firefly, things that people nowadays are talking about, you know, wow, what a great show that was, yet it was canceled by Fox. It just makes you wonder what's really going on, because the demand is certainly there, but if the viewership isn't there, the advertisers aren't going to keep pumping dollars into these shows, and it's the advertising dollars that allow these shows to be on television. So it really finds these companies in a dilemma.
Yeah, as technology continues to get better and better and media continues to morph, I mean, literally, everyone's entertainment means ultimately the word download comes into the vocabulary, whether it's TV shows, music, movies, and now podcasting and everything else. Eventually, it gets tied in to computers.
So I guess unless the networks start actually streaming on the computers what's being shown on TV and actually finding a way to monitor those, it seems that for the time being anyway, it's just a gray area where the people that are producing these shows are going to have to find a way around this.
Yeah, I remember watching a show, I think it was maybe on CNN, and they were talking about some major network executives are trying to quickly brainstorm ways to distribute content on the internet. You know, if they want their sitcoms to reach a wider audience, offer the show, but like a DVD, offer bonus scenes, make it longer, give it some sort of perk to where you want to download Lost or anything that's really popular right now and give it some additional content.
I guess the trick with that, though, would be to make it free, you know, free downloads.
Yeah, and then, you know, you got to be inundated with pop-up ads and things all over the place. Once again, the advertisers win.
I think that's the part that a lot of people don't consciously acknowledge is it's the advertising dollars that allow these shows to be made. And if you're not going to support the advertisers, they no longer have an interest in putting money into the networks to produce these shows. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, and it's going to be really tricky in the next few years as, you know, the digital revolution takes place. Congress, for the last few years, has had a huge push to get broadband internet everywhere. They don't want people using dial-up anymore. They understand that a lot of content out there, you really need a broadband connection to be able to view it. So, I mean, even with Congress making big pushes like that, they're kind of forcing more and more people onto their computers. So the networks, the recording artists, the movie production studios really have to keep that, you know, in their consciousness and really change the way things are being done.
In cartoon news, Justice League recently wrapped up its big season, and Steve has a review.
Not necessarily a review. Let's call it a complaint.
a reaction.
Yes. Let's call it fueled with passion. Unfortunately, you know, if you haven't seen the episode, I guess it's ran like two or three times already. Hopefully you've seen it. If not, I'm going to spoil it for you. Unfortunately, I have to, just so you can understand why I feel the seething contempt brewing up inside myself, particularly with the end of the episode. I'm sure a lot of you remember Terry McGinnis, Batman Beyond. Kyle, I know you and I both thought that was a phenomenal show.
Great show. I own a production cell from it. I just thought that was great. And of course, it got canceled.
Of course. But apparently DC wanted to, you know, kind of pull a Lucas thing and tie everything together so that everything makes sense in continuity. And the way they wrapped up the season finale of this season of Justice League was to kind of tell us a little bit more about Terry McGinnis's origin. And the way that they decided to explain this was by, in a nutshell, saying Terry McGinnis is a clone of Bruce Wayne. And I'm sure a lot of you are sighing right now. But they do kind of explain it in a somewhat interesting way. The government program, codenamed Project Batman Beyond, they acknowledge that Batman wouldn't be around forever. So one way to ensure that there would always be a Batman would to be to get some of Bruce Wayne's DNA, find a couple that matched the profile of Bruce Wayne's parents, inject the father with some of Bruce Wayne's DNA, and then when they had a child, that DNA would be passed on to him. So ultimately, again, Terry McGinnis is somewhat of a clone of Bruce Wayne, and this was all orchestrated for him to become the next Batman. To that, all I can say is boo and hiss. I think that was a horrible, horrible cop-out that was used by DC, the producers of Justice League. For me, it made for a horrible season ending, so much to the point where I'm not even looking forward to the next season now, because it seems like everybody's got what I call Lucasitis. You know, it's, you have somebody who goes out there and puts out a game plan, and everybody wants to kind of copy it, you know, about how we're going to tie all these different characters and all these different shows together so that everybody can see this continuity. In the end, I think it was crap.
Well, and I guess the only solution to that would be to do the most cliche of wrap-ups and have it go, oh, it was all a dream. But, you know, you kind of wish that would happen, because I agree. That's lame. I didn't see it, and I consider myself a fan of Justice League Unlimited. I think it's a fantastic evolution of the show. But for them to take that in that direction, no.
And I know there's a lot of people who are listening to this that are really big Justice League fans, and I don't say it to intimidate or upset anybody. It's just I'm in my 30s, grew up watching a lot of cartoons, a lot of comics. And I just see that, you know, a lot of the storylines nowadays are just getting really weak. The plots are getting weak, and they feel the need to, you know, tie up a lot of these loose ends and in a manner that just doesn't seem to make a heck of a lot of sense. It destroyed a lot of the character development for Batman Beyond.
There's no necessity for DC Universe to be, or Star Wars or anything, any sort of universe. Every single element does not have to be tied to the other element.
And I think that's what made Batman Beyond a really great show, because although it did involve Bruce Wayne, senior Bruce Wayne no longer in the Batman role, there was a lot of new elements to the show. You had a new character with new situations, kind of like a post-apocalyptic type city. It was really refreshing. And then when you go ahead and throw it back and tie it back into a lot of history, it kind of loses that newness, that freshness.
They have involved Batman Beyond before in a Justice League episode, right?
They have. And what they've done in the past has been, you know, really groundbreaking. They presented it in a really nice, unique way. But this time here, the way to wrap it up and bring it together, I don't think it was script writing at its best, to say the least.
Well, at least Teen Titans still kicks butt.
Courtesy laugh.
Universal has secured the movie rights to the video game God of War, which was created by Sony Computer Entertainment. I own God of War. I've played God of War. I've beat God of War. It is a phenomenal game. I mean, absolutely phenomenal. I'm a big fan of G4 Tech TV, and this is only the second game this year. Now, mind you, we're at the end of July. It's only the second game this year they've given a 5 out of 5. So I'm really looking forward to this. Just wanted to get it out there to you guys.
Hopefully it's not going to be The Rock or Goldberg or Stone Cold or something, you know?
I think this type of movie really warrants some kind of unknown, somebody who can come in and just, you know, really develop that character, and not somebody like a Brad Pitt or Arnold Schwarzenegger, God forbid.
Right, and anyone who knows Steve knows that he is a very harsh critic on video games. It takes a lot to impress this man, and for him to say God of War is an awesome game, that really says something.
Well, I mean, to put it to you very simply, this isn't a game I could ever recommend for you to go out and rent, because once you pop it in your PS2 and you start playing it for a little bit, you're not going to want to put that controller down. So you're better off just going and picking it up, shell out the $40-$50 for it, because in the end, you're going to be paying more than that for your late fees, because you're not going to get this in after a weekend.
All right, now on to the voicemail. We're checking the listener line.
Hello.
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 Hello. Hello. Hello. Hello.
This is Jimmy Musgrove, known far and wide for my journalistic exploits. This Justice League situation proves that Otherworld Steve does not know entertainment. That was a great way to finish out the story. Lots of continuity there. If you've ever seen the Batman Mask of the Phantasm movie, it links in perfectly. He had a problem with Matrix Revolutions and just about every other ending to anything. So, he sucks. Thank you.
Oh,
yeah, I'm from Mars. I have no idea who you are. Anyway, goodbye.
This sucks.
Hey, guys. Oh, God, Steve. Oh, I really love your show. This is Jeff from Atlanta.
Yes, isn't it delightful?
Several nice and easy ways you can find us on the internet at bigballbroadcast.blogspot.com. You can also enter the feed at iTunes, search us out there, or your podcatching client. If you want to shoot us an email, thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. And our listener line, you can reach us once again at 818-574-3607. Who knows, maybe you'll end up on our next show. Until next week, I'm Kyle Hebert.
And this is Otherworld Steve.
See ya!
Later.
The Big Bald Broadcast was not recorded live in front of a studio audience, because they couldn't pay enough money to stick around long enough. They don't even pay me. I may be a robot, but I like money too. Word to your mother. Yo.